PFT Media.
Well, we've got our peanuts, we've got our Cracker Jacks, and we've got our bologna sandwiches. We are ready to head into the origin of early American sports on Half True History. Welcome to Half True History, where we take the legends of yesterday, slap them with today, and make a pretty decent story that you might be interested in. I am, of course, your professor for the night, Dan P. And controlling the airwaves is our super producer, Chris Crespo.
What's up, fellas?
And as always, my reliable teammate here, the Ty Cobb, to my Honus Wagner.
Oh, you can! I couldn't be Clemente. I had to be the racist third baseman.
Clemente wasn't around yet.
There was no other. I'll take Shoeless Joe.
You want Shoeless Joe? Fine. You have Shoeless Joe. I don't know. I wanted to give you that bad boy title.
That guy was the worst. Yeah, he was the worst. The
cleats
worst
out,
of the
baby. Worst. Cleats out. Sports.
Sports.
Sports. Sports ball. The stuff that we love in America. So much so.
What's the oldest sports in America? Because they say lacrosse, but lacrosse is Canadian.
Let's be honest. You're always going to find some wackadoodle sport that was before the sport that people know.
Yeah, like turkey kicking.
Right. And now there's even evidence of European your world football and American football, like the modern versions, really starting at the exact same time. So it's like one of those things. It's just like, if you want to be obscure enough, you can find the origins of anything better before something else.
Soccer was the first sport. When they used to kick heads.
Kick heads, yeah.
Yeah.
So.
They didn't have balls back then.
No, just.
They would just decapitate somebody and game on.
And so officially in America, it's baseball.
Yeah.
Hey, baseball.
Baseball. Because, well, you know, we needed something to do. And hitting things with sticks is an American tradition.
Did they steal that? They stole that from other games, right? But I bet you cricket was first.
Probably.
And they're like, we don't like this whole running straightforward shit.
The origins of baseball are all over the place, and this is kind of what fits in really well with our Half True History theme, because we don't really start seeing baseball as we like would recognize it until about the 1850s.
That's still even earlier than I thought. I thought you were going to say like 1880s, 1890s, 1850s is a long time ago, man.
Yeah, no, it's antebellum stuff. It's pre-Civil War. And then there's the question of, where did it come from? We don't really know. It might have come from cricket. It might have borrowed itself from one of the other Irish or German games of these immigrants coming over. We aren't really sure. But what we do know is that we do know that we are going to make sure that we create a fiction around it to make it as American as possible.
Okay.
Yeah. Hey, cat, how's it going?
Hey. It's a history cat.
Yep. It's all
dropping
around.
A fact. He dropped a fact for Dan to say.
Like, yo, I got it. I got you, bro. So the we have to. So we basically create a history to kind of solidify it as an American sport. So we go as far back as Abner Doubleday, who is an American Revolutionary War general, and they make up this fiction that he started the first like beta test of what baseball was going to be while he was stationed in, where do you say?
Where's the Hall of Fame?
Cooperstown. 1850. I'm going to station Gettysburg?
Coopersville.
Okay.
Yeah. By stationing Coopersville, Abner Doubleday invented baseball. And now we have some legitimacy to the sport.
Okay. How did this liar come up about with this sport?
This liar had money.
Okay, there you go.
This liar wanted to create a legitimacy to help his business because this liar's name was Albert Spalding.
Ah, Mr. Spalding.
Mm-hmm. Yes. The man who owned a sporting goods store and wanted to make sure. Yeah. Spalding Balls.
But how can he have a sporting goods store when there were no sports?
He saw the sport because baseball was becoming popular after the Civil War by 1870. And little baseball clubs, local municipalities and stuff would start forming little leagues and clubs and such. And he realized he's going to jump on it ahead of time. Be one of the first people to just sell ready-made sports equipment for them. And so he does, you know, he starts out there in New York because that's where baseball is starting in New York. And he makes a decent enough money, but he keeps thinking, like, if I can get this, like, national, then I can make even more money. And then I can really sell my sporting gear. And in order to make this national, I got to sell it as this is one of our great American pastimes.
The original American pastime.
Right. I thought he was going to be the original sponsorship.
So he starts off as he starts off a baseball player. He's not just some guy who watches his fans and says, I can make money off of this. He's a pitcher for the Boston Red Stockings.
Ah, the one of the oldest teams still playing.
Right, in the
1890s.
So, yeah, he's part of the Boston Red Stockings for the National Association of Professional Baseball Players, which opens in 1871. And it's extremely loosely organized. There's almost no schedule. There's barely any rules on how it works, how you're going to figure out who's the better person, how many games per season. It's a cluster that ends in about 4 years. It shuts its doors in about 4 years.
The only rule they had was no blacks.
How'd you guess?
That rule was there. Rule one, before we start anything.
No blacks. We're going to get to that in just a second. Because yeah, that is the rule, as you know. So he starts a sporting goods store after he retires as a pitcher. He sees that it's getting really, really popular. And so he creates the mythos. He creates the whole Abner Doubleday thing and all of that stuff. And then in 1876, and of course, what a great year to open up America's game than the centennial.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the 100 years of America's birth. And now we've got, look at me. Well, I'm going to create the National League, the first real official baseball league. Nice. So that's how he opens it up there. And like Pedro said, number one rule, no blacks.
Nice. Latinos However, weren't invented.
They are allowing for Mexicans, which is their general term for Latinos back then. And Native Americans can play too. So if you were a black player and you really wanted to play baseball.
Tell me, hold up, come on, before you go into that. Do you have any name of the first Mexican or first Native American player?
Not the name of the first player. I do have the name of the first black baseball team.
Okay.
But I don't have the individual players.
Like Jack Blackfoot had to be like outfield.
Yeah. Well, most black players would try to pretend to pass off as Hispanic or Native American in order to play in the white leagues.
Okay.
So they would, and the best thing about that back then was that white people didn't speak Spanish. No white person spoke Spanish. So you could just make up Spanish.
What am I talking about?
That, and thus we get the creation of the first all-black league, all-black team, the Cuban Giants.
The Cuban Giants.
The Cuban Giants. I've heard of the... It's 1885, and they open up as this exhibition league, and so they could play other white teams. They would cast themselves as this, as the official baseball team of Cuba. And they would just babble to each other in fake Spanish the entire game. And people thought they were legitimately Cubans who are coming to America to play their ball. Oh, my God.
What a great movie this would make.
Right?
Based on a true story, how nine black guys duped the baseball world so they can play baseball. Were they good?
Yeah, they were pretty good. I mean, it was a different era of baseball, but from what I heard, the games were very entertaining and people really looked forward to them visiting their town to play the local white teams.
Like the Harlem Globetrotters of baseball.
Like, yeah, very Globetrotters.
The Housewives. The Housewives were very eager to go to these games.
Yeah, I need to watch those Cubans play.
Yeah.
It's okay because they're Cuban. They're from a different place.
Honey, can we have a Cuban over? I would love to. It's for the girls' book club.
They'll get culture out of it, seeing someone from a foreign language. Maybe they'll teach them some Spanish. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I mean, that's basically what they did. They knew about, I would say, 10 authentic Spanish words and phrases, and then the rest would just be whatever babble they could get.
Oh my God, that's hilarious.
Yeah. And sports were being embraced at this time. This is the progressive era, what we call in America. And a lot of people really liked the idea of organized sports because it was the idea of it promoting teamwork. It was a wholesome thing for people to watch. It was a family thing because the other alternative was the burlesque shows.
Baseball or burlesque, that's it.
Yeah, like you didn't have much of a choice. So yeah, people started, they really pushed, a lot of local governments pushed the idea of more organized sports, and that way they could form local YMCAs and get the kids involved and teach them morals and such at an early age. So the push was to invent more of these sports that the kids would like. So one of the local YMCA coaches is Dr. James Naismith in 1891. The idea was he'll figure out a game that doesn't require as much equipment as baseball.
Baseball does require a lot of equipment.
Right. You stick and a ball and gloves and things. That was just too much for the budget of the YMCA.
Come on.
Bases and space.
Mm-hmm.
And then if it rained, there was an issue, so it had to be indoor.
And you got to do it during the day because there's no lights out there.
And we have a surplus of baskets that we don't know what to do with.
Yep.
Peach season's over. I don't know what to do with all these baskets.
And no blacks.
Now, 50-50 on whether or not he said no blacks, because he is Canadian.
Yeah, you're right. You're right.
Okay, fair.
So we'll give that a pass. But yeah, he's got. Well, we'll just have a ball and then all of these baskets, and basketball becomes a thing in 1891. It's really just a kids' game and a college game for decades afterwards, though. It doesn't really pick up as an adult sport. You don't see it really, really into it until the 20th century. If you type in pictures of early basketball, you'll notice that right away they had a new idea once they first unveiled the sport. And that new idea was they actually cut a hole at the bottom of the basket.
That's a good idea. Gotta go get the fetching ladder. Jimmy scored another point.
Yep. And it's this beautiful. I don't know if I can share the picture. Can I share things on Zoom or not? Or?
I think you can. Let me see. Share screen. Yeah, I think you can. At the bottom, share screen.
Okay, cool. So let me see if I can share this screen. This picture with you guys.
Exciting. Double check your tabs, buddy.
Hey, Joe Rostia. Pornhub is not up.
Cool. All right, so yeah, here we go. You see it?
Oh, yeah. But yeah. There is an Olympic sport that is exactly like that.
Oh, there is, huh?
Yeah.
Okay.
Which I think they call it something else. It's not handball. They call it something else, but it's like basketball.
Mm.
Let me see if I can find it.
So that basket looks like it's a good 9-10 feet off the ground for sure.
Yeah.
Is that guy really tall then in the foreground?
I mean, most people were about 5'9", 5'10", so it's probably maybe like a 6 or 7 footer.
And it's a big basket too compared to the size of that ball.
Giant basket, yeah.
I could sink that shot from very far away.
It's called netball.
Netball, okay.
All right.
Similar
to basketball, though, the rules, equipment, and team numbers are different. There's no dribbling, no running with the ball. 7 players pass within 3 seconds. Ball and basket slightly smaller, no backboard, player designated to certain areas.
Okay. So this isn't a picture of netball. This is definitely basketball. But if you notice, yeah, they're playing on a grass field. So it definitely had more football-esque elements to it.
And also that dude in the back right has a killer mustache.
Oh my God, right? That is a progressive era mustache.
Look at that. Look at that porn stash.
Yeah, right?
That thing is full.
All of them got mustaches.
He looks like Joey Ryan's ancestor.
And I like how the guy in front, he's got like one of them Scotland Yard hats.
Yeah. So that's, early basketball there.
That's awesome. It's like, all right, we're playing shirts versus blazers.
Yeah, excellent. Belts versus suspenders.
Ah, excellent. Yeah, team up now. We'll get the fetching ladder.
So that was 1891. And before that was 1882. And I skipped it there. 1882 is when we get the first football game.
Ooh, all right.
And that had to be inspired from rugby.
It definitely, when you look at the early stuff too, and the leather helmets that they originally played in, and just the idea of it, yeah, it was Walter Camp. He was at Yale, and he invented this sport for the college boys to play.
So it's a game for the Yaleys.
Mm-hmm. It was originally an Ivy League game. Nice. Yeah, and it was, just get the ball from him anyway and run. And, you know, it was a good old man sport. Builds up characters in the boys.
Get out there and work as a team and defeat the others.
Mm-hmm. which was great because a few years later, it helped lead to the NCAA because way too many college kids were dying from the game.
Oh, wow.
Wow.
So they were like, I think you need rules.
Well, what were they doing? Were they like bringing revolvers to the matches?
No,
they didn't know the rules.
Yeah, they know, like, you're talking about like head-first collisions. You're talking about like kicking them when they're down and stuff, like getting the ball from them in any way.
Yeah, yeah. Like, so you didn't say I couldn't bring this knife. You never said nothing about me not bringing my knife.
Oh, this is illegal?
When? Now. I guess knives are illegal now. Fine.
I guess I'll bring a screwdriver.
Oh, now that's illegal, you're telling me. I can't bring any puncture weapons.
This is just bullshit.
Somebody showed up with a mallet. Okay, no, nothing. Just nothing. Your hand.
Stop. Right.
Like, you know what? We really got far away from the spirit of the game, man.
Hold on. Let me rewrite the rules.
You used to do it for the love of the game. Now you're all about rules.
Relax. Rule two, no weapons.
No weapons.
So we'll form there. There we go. And that's our first three big professional sports. And again, they're mostly only baseball was really an adult sport early on in the progressive era. Basketball, like I said, we don't see professional adult basketball teams until the 1920s and 30s. And the same thing with football. There's no National Football League until the 1920s.
But I think basketball was more of a winter sport kind of deal.
Winter sport, and it really was seen as more of a college drill type of sport. Like, it was just more of a fun kids game. So college was really the farthest that it went at the time.
It's like, you know how you have darts and then you have lawn darts. Mm-hmm. It's like you have that paddle with the ball and the string, and then you have like the peach basket that you got to put the ball into in the field. It's like the larger version of the same game. Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and baseball even back then was just totally wild. There were very little rules. And it was definitely a Wild West type world. Watching baseball in the early years. Well, for one thing, you weren't going to see a high scoring game. Because this was known as the early years of baseball in the 1900s were known as the dead ball era. And
hey, you know how hard it is to hit it. A baseball is one of the hardest things. So now imagine it's the first time ever you're coming across a sport.
Mm-hmm.
And then why is it called the dead ball? It's because of the way the ball's made, right?
It's because there were no rules on when you should switch out the ball.
Ah, okay.
So the pitchers would mangle this mother. Mm-hmm. And beat it up and spit on it and, you know, jump on it. And so they would just be throwing this pile of mucky fabric at the batter who couldn't hit it for anything.
A gross just piece of
leather. A hard sandbag.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And there was no rule that you had to throw it overhanded either.
So a lot of underhanders?
A lot of different styles.
Yeah, a lot of people just underhandedly throwing muddy beanbags at the batter and seeing, hey, see what you can do with this. Hmm. It was still super popular, probably because it was like the only thing going at the time.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But it was very interesting how they did that. And it won't be for a while until you look at the 1920s when they decide to end the dead ball era and change the ball up every few pitches or so.
Make the game a little more entertaining to watch.
Uh-huh. And here's where we get the popularity of baseball food as well. Up until this point, they were just, you know, they were no concession stands. So merchants would just set up whatever outside of the fields to see if they could get some money.
Get your ham hocks. Get your ham hocks.
The most popular, in the original baseball years, the official food of baseball was these ham sandwiches.
Really?
It was just ham sandwiches, and just grilled up. Maybe made a little bit warm, thrown on some bread, and that's about it. And that was the time. And then we start to get the hot dogs and hamburgers.
In England, they like the meat pies.
Yes. But it was that Wild West as far as what you could get. at a baseball field because nobody really knew what the official food was.
Bison eyelids.
Hotcakes. Hotcakes and baseball.
Yeah, a bunch of syrup and butter sitting out in the sun. In the middle of summer. It's August.
Hard-boiled eggs. Hard-boiled eggs, everybody.
I'm wearing my finest wool summer suit.
Pedro's right. Those actually were very popular.
Well, but probably hard-boiled eggs. Those are easy to cook up and then sell them. Mm-hmm. Like, here you go, $1 an egg or 50 cents, whatever, 5 cents an egg.
You can throw it. You know what I mean? Like, hey, row 7. Wah!
The early ballparks in 1900 were madhouses. They were very small because nobody really knew what kind of crowd baseball was bringing. So you're looking at these stadiums just being extremely packed to the point where fans would just spill out onto the fields most of the time.
Wow.
And there was nothing really
back then. Back then, it was only the sides that would get fans. Nothing behind, like, the fences. That didn't start popping up until late 80s, I would say.
Yeah, exactly. So most people, if they couldn't get a seat, you would just see this huge, like, Braveheart battalion of people up on this hill watching the baseball game for free. But yeah, it was a rowdy environment. This was they started to get real sectionalism started to show up here. Like, your team represented your city, so it really felt like a war between Boston and New York. And you would have a lot of fights and everything between fans. And it was not uncommon to stop the games several times because of all the mass brawling in the stands.
Because the rivalries between them, like, people talk about being into their sports today, but if there's like a fight, it's big news. Like, oh my goodness, look at this brawl, because it never happens. It rarely happens that there's actual physical violence at a game.
Right. And yeah, back then it was expected. You know, it's like a reverse hockey game, where they just expect the fans to fight at some point.
Like, it's part of the experience. Like, someone better break out to a fight or I'm going to ask for my money back.
Right. So, and the original guys, the original stars of this time were not any better. They were all foul-mouthed and drunk half the time when they were playing, and they picked fights with fans, and they...
Say his name.
What's up?
Say his name.
We'll say his name. We'll say Ty Cobb's name later.
I thought you meant Babe Ruth.
Oh, no, not Babe. Not just yet, but he will be. But we're talking about early Cy Young, Honus Wagner, Ty Cobb. Very, very just not what you would consider a sports role model back then.
Wait, Ty Cobb was before Babe Ruth?
Yeah.
Really?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Cy Young, Honus Wagner, Ty Cobb. Ty Cobb debuts for the Tigers in 1905.
I'm thinking Ty Cobb was after Babe Ruth because he hated the Babe.
Ty was very active even after his career as a sports commentator and writer for it all. So he would have definitely said something in his papers or his editorials.
Hey, it's like the Shaquille O'Neal of his day, man.
Mm-hmm.
People want to hear what Ty has to say.
Well, Ty's an interesting, a very interesting fellow. And we'll get to him, like I said, a little bit later here. But because of all this, a lot of families started to really stop taking the whole family because of just how crude and lewd it was getting. They might as well just go to the burlesque show at that point.
Yeah, there's people fighting in the stands. You got drunk players cursing out on the field.
Right. Wait, they had burlesque?
That's your only option.
Oh.
I mean, those were your only entertainments back then. And then by this time, 1900, I mean, you could go pay a nickel and see a guy sneeze for 5 seconds.
Yeah, imagine having burlesque shows in the middle of a baseball game, how attendance would have... Can't do it now.
No. So some teams decide they're going to capitalize on this lack of family-friendly service, and it's the New York Giants that are the ones who do it in 1900. And they bring in a guy named Christy Mathewson.
Okay.
And here is your this. He kind of sets the standard for the clean cut, all American boy type thing. Soft spoken, very, you know, shakes hands with kids at the games, very religious, doesn't curse, all that kind of stuff. So here we kind of get our stand, the set standard there for what it would be.
Then he retires, and then we find out he's a pedophile, child rapist.
Well, not womanizing. Much. I don't think he doesn't get that long. Unfortunately, he's got a I forget the disease off the top of my head, but he dies in 1925. He's very, very young when he dies.
Shingles.
Maybe.
He dies something of strep throat.
Right. And so it becomes popular. 1900. Spalding and his National League basically have the monopoly on all baseball. Even the minor leagues are all connected in some way to a National League team that he has created. He has no interest in cleaning up his appearance. Things like Christy Mathewson are really just a flash in the pan. Because he controls everything. It's like, what are you going to do? His players were restricted to a cap salary. And so no player could make more than $2,400 a year off of the National League. Now, ooh, adjusted for inflation, that's around $67,000 a year today.
Okay.
So that was the highest player paid player. So yeah, people like Honus Wagner and Cy Young, they would be making about, you know, $67,000 a year. But the other guys, you know, they've been making, you know, pretty low. And it's, you know, it was a pretty physical game at that time. And so the idea of you really putting your body on the line for not that much money was a little bit rough for most people.
What year was this?
You're looking at 01.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm thinking you were leading into like the Black Sox scandal, but
not yet. We're almost there. Because then we got to bring in a rival. You know, Spalding really thought he had the only game in town and no one could stop him. And then, of course, someone does. Someone shows up with another league. It's this guy named Ban Johnson.
Ban, B-A-N?
B-A-N, Byron Ban Johnson.
Wow, that's a good name.
Or Big Ban Johnson, yeah. Big old dude.
Big Ban Johnson.
Yeah. He looks exactly like you would expect someone named Big Ban Johnson to look like.
They used to call him Slugger from Louisville. No? Not him?
No. Louisville Slugger was already in operation, though.
Okay.
Honus Wagner was who they asked to sell and put in posters for their baseball. So Honus Wagner was the first celebrity all-star to endorse the product.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. So Ban Johnson, he buys the Western League division and basically just turns that entire little minor league into what he calls the American League. And he's going to up the price. He's basically going to pull a WCW and offer all these established National League stars twice what they're being offered in order to jump ship to his league.
It's a smart move if you can afford it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so by 1901, we have a National League, a full National League with about 8 teams and an American League with 8 teams.
And in between that, there's the Negro Leagues.
And then there's the Negro Leagues. Yeah. Still doing their thing. You're a Mets guy, right, Pedro?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. They're not around yet.
Nope. 64.
Yeah. 64. Yeah, they're the expand. Yeah. New York's team was the New York Giants at this time, is what you had. And the Brooklyn Superbas. The Brooklyn Superbas.
Oh.
Yeah. And then they became the Dodgers.
The hell is that? That sounds like a sex organ.
They really thought they could call them superb people and make it like a sexy with an A thing, the Superbas. But yeah.
It sounds like a rejected Toyota car.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the New York Giants, which now are in San Francisco today. The Brooklyn Superbas, which become the LA Dodgers. The Boston Beaniers.
Mm-hmm.
And they become the Braves later on.
And then move to Atlanta.
Yeah.
No, first Milwaukee, right?
First Milwaukee and then to Atlanta, right. Then, so the four teams that have never changed their name in the National League were the Philadelphia Phillies, the Pittsburgh Pirates, St. Louis Cardinals, and the Cincinnati Reds. Obviously, Cincinnati Reds have never changed their name.
And at this point, it'd be insane to change it. It's been so long.
Right? Even the Cubs had a different name. They were the Chicago Orphans.
Orphans?
Orphans.
Oh, okay. I thought you said Orphans.
No. Chicago Disney, Orphans.
Disney's okay. Favorite team.
Yeah. That's a crazy name.
Mm-hmm. And then on the American side, you got the Boston Americans, who will later become the Red Sox.
That's awesome. That's a great name. We're the Americans.
Right. The Baltimore Orioles.
Mm-hmm.
But they'll become the New York Yankees.
Oh.
The Philadelphia Athletics.
Mm-hmm.
The Washington Nationals, which then become the Minnesota Twins.
Yep.
The Cleveland Blues. And then they decided, no, you know what? There's not enough Indian stereotypes in Ohio. We need
we need representation. So yeah. Can you make me a logo of the most racist Indian character?
Right.
Hilarious Indian character.
Big old smile, if you could.
Yeah.
We got the Milwaukee.
You can make him look like John Lovitz.
Yes. John Lovitz was an Indian.
Yeah. Who's that? You know. You know who he is.
You know who he is. The Milwaukee Brewers, who later became the Baltimore Orioles.
Oh, all right.
Chicago White Stockings.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, the White Sox. And the only American League team to not change their name, the Detroit Tigers.
It's a good name.
Yeah.
It's a lot of loose Tigers in Detroit back then.
Mm-hmm.
So they were known for it.
So obviously, you got to settle who's the best baseball league. So in 1903, they throw down, and that's where we get the first World Series.
The World Series.
World Series. October 1st, 1903. No one else in the world has baseball teams. So we are the best. Yeah.
It's smart marketing.
It's like in wrestling in Puerto Rico. Yeah. You had the world champion. So in Puerto Rico, they said, you know what? We don't need the world champion. We need a universal champion.
Mm-hmm.
So that's how they came up with the universal title holder, which is greater than the world. You can have the world.
Yeah, what's greater than the universe? What's greater than that?
And then, so yeah, it just goes into the dead ball era. And then, of course, yeah, we have Ty Cobb, who is a nut job, to say the least.
But nut jobs are, for some reason, like the top of their skill level. Like, we have our Ty Cobb, which is Kanye West.
Yes. He's considered by many people as the greatest but most volatile baseball player in history.
Just like Kanye West. We say the same thing about him. Yeah.
And he really, because he always said, he's like, baseball is something like a war. And that's how he entered with the mindset. To quote him, I had to fight all my life to survive. They were all against me, but I beat the bastards and left them in the ditch.
Pretty intense. You know, playing a game.
Yeah, he's just, and he was known for sliding to base first with his cleats spikes high, so nobody wanted to tag him.
Yeah. And back then, it was those cleats with like metal nails.
Yeah.
Pretty much. They weren't the little, they were actual nails, like track kind of, oof.
Mm-hmm.
What a piece of shit that guy was.
Yeah, he was. He was, and, like I said, just a nasty Southern boy. Where I played for the Detroit Tigers. Nasty piece of work. You know, injured a lot of people, hospitalized a lot of people while he was active. And then surprisingly, when he's done, you know, and everything, and he starts writing sports columns and such, he's actually one of the first, if not actually, he's the first white sports star and sports writer to defend Jackie Robinson. Some kind of change of heart or anything in his old era, but he actually becomes one of the biggest proponents of minorities being part of baseball, because he was always like, hey, it's about the best guy there. And if he's the best guy there, it's the best guy there.
But he wasn't. Jackie Robinson wasn't the best Negro player.
He wasn't that. No, not at all.
Okay.
Yeah, no, but Ty was just saying, like, whoever gets the spot gets the spot. It shouldn't matter what their race was. This is chilled out Ty Cobb. So I'm not trying to say that he was this good guy all along, of course. This is like.
No, I mean, he could change, but, yeah, you know, his body of work just supersedes.
Mm-hmm.
His thing, yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, this is, yeah, the Ty Cobb that defended Jackie Robinson is the one who got three ghosts to visit him on Christmas Eve type of Ty Cobb. But, yeah, he was, I really think he's one of the most famous baseball players, just as far as reputation even alone, despite his ability. Babe Ruth, of course, will always be, you know, on everyone's mouth, but Ty is definitely...
Babe Ruth is baseball. Ty Cobb is infamous and famous at the same time.
Yeah.
You know, Jackie Robinson is, you know, the barrier breaker.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, that's one cool thing about baseball that has. And, you know, for Spanish people, is everybody's Clemente, 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 but he wasn't the first Spanish player.
Right. And who was that?
I think it was Irán Beathorn.
Okay.
Let me double check.
All right,
that's the first Puerto Rican baseball player to make it in the major leagues.
Mm.
Yeah, but Clemente was great.
Yes, no doubt.
And then he died tragically delivering aid to doing humanitarian stuff. So legend grows. The legend continues.
Irán Beathorn was the first Puerto Rican baseball player.
Okay.
Chicago Cubs, 1942. A pitcher.
1942. Okay, that's cool. Yeah.
It's because he developed those arm muscles, cutting all that sugar cane.
Right.
No, I don't know. He developed them in the First World War.
Mm.
You know, when they needed people.
Yeah.
Hey, we give you 42. Citizen.
42. He could have been in the Second War.
Well, he got called up in 42. So
yeah.
He got the arms from the First War.
After the World Series, they decide to merge the leagues, and that's when we're going to get the Major League Baseball organization. But there's no commissioner yet.
Okay.
The owners still kind of do whatever they want, and Ban Johnson and Alfred Spalding just kind of make up the rules as they go. Until 1919, Pedro. There's a World Series in 1919.
Mm-hmm.
Between the Cincinnati Reds and the Chicago White Sox.
White Sox favored to win.
Mm-hmm. Everyone thought they were going to, right? And, suddenly they find out the Cincinnati Reds win the game, win, you know, the series of games. And it's revealed that 8 players had taken a bribe to throw the game. Anywhere between $5,000 and $10,000, depending on the player.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And at the center of all that controversy was the very famous or infamous Shoeless Joe Jackson, who was a very loved ball player. You're talking about like a very, very well-liked guy. Definitely like your Christy Mathewson, basically, at this time type of figure. Mm-hmm. And he knew about the bribe. He didn't take the bribe, but he knew, didn't tell anyone. And so because of that, he gets indicted with the other players, and
he becomes like the focus for some, because the other ones were like no names.
Yeah, but he was the only one, and I think even still today, he's not allowed in the Baseball Hall of Fame.
No, mm-hmm. There's petitions out there because they're saying, "Hey, if you're gonna let Pete Rose."
Right.
Which don't let Pete Rose in when he dies. That's the mess. That's the thing. Is they don't want to let Pete Rose in the Hall of Fame while he's alive.
Mm.
Don't wait till he dies. That way.
It's the Macho Man gimmick.
Yes.
Is Pete Rose in the WWE Hall of Fame?
Yes,
he is.
Well, there you go. He's set.
Yeah. Go visit his plaque in nowhere.
In Bristol, Connecticut.
No, they don't have it.
They don't have it. They were talking about Orlando, and then the COVIDs came.
Yeah.
Nice.
Next to the Hard Rock, I think it was supposed mm-hmm. to be.
And with the dead ball era pretty much is kind of dead after this scandal by 1919, 1920, baseball gets its first commissioner, where we start actually having rules about pitching, rules about basically everything, and we start to set down the path of what's going to be more of the modern baseball that we think of today.
What do you mean 3 strikes, I'm out?
Yeah, the game switches from the pitchers to the batters as they have fresh balls brought in after a certain amount of time, and they also bring the field in to allow for more exciting home runs for the fans.
More scoring.
Right. More scoring. That's what people want.
Yeah.
You know, and that's, of course, the time of the Babe, really. So, and that's our early American sports, you know. Like I said, football and basketball still kind of circling the college drain at this time. It's really baseball's king, I want to say, until 1960s. Then it gets challenged.
Just about, yeah.
Yeah. So that's it. And then I think football takes over, I would say 1980s, 1990s is when football starts to edge them out.
I would say football late 70s.
Okay, you want to go to late 70s for that? Okay.
Around late 70s. I mean, 60-something maybe. I mean, because the Super Bowl didn't really become a spectacle.
Until Namath made it a spectacle.
Well, Namath made it famous because he called the thing, but the Super Bowl wasn't what we know of the Super Bowl until like the 80s.
Yeah.
The 49ers, mm-hmm. The Dolphins.
Right.
The you know what I mean?
Yeah, when you actually had like pretty impressive athletic feats going on and everything. Yeah. So, and then, you know, basketball just kind of falls in after that. And it's amazing that they all kind of become famous in order as they were invented.
So baseball was first.
Then football. In 82, we get football. Yeah. And then in 91, we get basketball.
But I think football right now is the top sport.
Absolutely.
Basketball is definitely number 2. Baseball has taken a drop real bad.
Baseball's taken a big drop. I think I know more hockey fans than I know baseball fans. So, well, you know, you had your time in the sun. You were America's pastime, and we'll never forget the racists you brought in and the drunks you allowed to grace your field.
Yeah, and disco night when they burn all those records.
Oh, Bad Disco. That story is great. Have you seen that story?
I've heard of it. I haven't actually like sat down and watched the story, though.
So it was a combination of Penny Beer Night.
Okay.
And Disco Night.
Uh-oh.
And Destroy Disco. So the fans were lit up.
And it was a doubleheader.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So they were all drinking. They were hammered drunk. And they gave them a bunch of disco records. It's a good
story on ESPN. If you get ESPN, there's a short
that
talks about it. You can get on YouTube. It's pretty good.
Yeah, I'm sure there are a few different like documentaries and stuff about it. It's pretty legendary. Consider the night disco died.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But the one that you get ESPN did, it's great. I think Bob Golic was there.
Nice.
So he talks about his experience being in the stands with the fights breaking out.
Yeah. It was like a throwback to early baseball stadiums.
Mm-hmm. Good day. So, all right, ladies and gentlemen, we thank you so much for paying attention and for being in attendance at this capacity crowd at Half True History. We're still here cranking out the hits despite our social distancing, and so is the rest of the PFT media group. And by the time this debuts, Crespo, do you have any new shows coming up? Anything you want to announce? Or?
Yeah, sure. This will be out. This is coming out right around New Year's. Yeah. So we do have a new, like, we've had this entertainment show for a while called The Meat Limit, the movie entertainment and television limit, and they got a sister show, Real Housewives of Reality. So for people into like reality TV stuff, they're into like they focus on the Real Housewives franchise, but they break off in other stuff. You know how many different shows are in the Real Housewives franchise?
Awesome.
I don't know, including all the spin-offs like the Vanderpump Rules and stuff like that. It is crazy. So we got that.
Frankel got a talk show out of it.
It's insane. So we got that going. Brand new show. People can check that out. And then everything else we got going on at pftmedia.com.
So that's what the Meat Limit. I swear to God, I thought that Meat Limit was a show about meat.
No, that's Offcuts is the food show.
There is a show about meat.
Yeah, we do have a show about meat.
That's what I thought, because there was a craze about barbecuing and grilling. So I'm like, oh, the Meat Limit. Oh, I get it. They're talking about meat. But then he broke it down, movie, entertainment, and television. And it's like, oh, shit.
Because when you look at it, it's an acronym, M.E. Yeah, it's always been an acronym, and that's what it stands for.
Very well done. Very well done, Meat Limit.
Meat Limit, yes. But then we also have a separate food show. So that's pretty funny.
Offcut.
We're covering our bases. Yeah, Offcuts from the guys from Orlando Meats.
And coming in 2021, the Macaroni Show. We're going to discuss different
sewing techniques.
Sewing techniques. Yeah.
It's about sewing.
And 18th, 17th century hat styles. Yeah.
It's about necklaces and sewing. The Macaroni Show.
There we go. Well, and with that, guys, we're going to cut as well. I thank you all for listening to Half True History with Pedro Lima and with me, Dan P. And we'll see you on the next page.
Peace!
A PFT Media production.